Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming out to Comic Book Club Live. Please give it up for your hosts, Alex, Justin, and Pete.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I am Pete.
And that's our man in the booth, Boothbed
Prime.
And guys,
happy belated, Mr. Boothman Prime.
Boothman Prime.
Birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Yeah.
Just you got to add that last part.
He's still here.
What do you think?
Yeah, could be belated anything.
Happy belated Monday.
to you.
It was your birthday, Boothman. What did you do?
I had a cosmic party.
A cosmic party? What does that mean? When I went cosmic bowling, it meant they just dimmed the lights and put the gutter so you couldn't lose. Is that what you did?
Oh, man, that sucks.
It made it way easier.
Pretty much. It was a big bang.
Oh, man. Okay,
being very coy sounds like an orgy or something.
Yeah. No. You're saying like condensing and exploding of planets and universes.
Oh, wow. That's what does that mean?
Let's keep it a secret.
Okay, wow. Very weird mysterious answers way about your birthday. Okay.
Off the show. All right.
Pete, were you at this fuck party or whatever it was?
No, I wanted to be there, but unfortunately I was in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Oh, and that's another orgy place.
Yeah.
Did you fuck some chocolate?
I fucked a lot of chocolate.
What were you doing in Hershey, Pennsylvania?
I was watching my brother's kids.
Oh, man. Apologize for that last joke then.
Yeah, you should. You should. It's really hard to keep track of three kids in a theme park.
Holy, yeah, that sounds like a nightmare.
It was a nightmare.
And your brother was like, I trust you to watch these three humans.
Yeah, well, anytime I go visit my brother, he just hands me his kids and is like, don't tell him where
I am. So just to be clear, I don't know, some of you might be new to the show. Pete, big aficionado for the snacks. Last week we talked about how he got sick eating cookies when we went to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So your brother
cookies
took you to a place that literally smells like chocolate all the time. Pay attention to something else and thought that would work?
Yeah. I only lost one kid for like 30 seconds. It was only a nightmare for like 30 seconds. And then he was
fine.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah.
How much chocolate did you eat?
Way too much.
You've had 2 weekends of nonstop sugar consumption.
Yeah.
Let me just say, I'm worried about you. You seem to be going to sugar places, too. Like, you stay out of these sugar towns.
Okay.
But welcoming to our sugar town tonight, which is what I like to call the stage.
That is what we call our show, is sugar town.
We have two amazing guests tonight. One is the creator of the new book, Queen of Kenosha. The other one is currently writing Wonder Woman and coming up, a Martian Manhunter. Ladies and gentlemen, Howard Shapiro and Steve Orlando!
Yeah. Welcome to the show!
Welcome.
Have a seat, have a microphone.
Please.
Have a seat, have a microphone. All right.
Please come sit down.
Enter one at a time. Really get your stage time in.
Yeah, there you go. Smart. Gotta get that. It's Sugartown. You gotta come one at a time.
Hey, when you're in Sugartown, you better be on top.
That's what they say in Sugartown. Howard, you're sitting close, so let's chat with you first. Queen of Kenosha, it's been a while since we had you on the show, but you have a new book coming out. What's the deal? What's the pitch for those who don't know about it?
Well, it's a new trilogy, so it's the first book in the trilogy. It's an original story. I wanted to do something different. I've done a bunch of hockey books, so I wanted to get away from that a little bit. And just came up with this original, really good idea, I think, and had a great illustrator, actually from Brooklyn. Erica Chan.
Brooklyn.
Nice. Keeping it local.
Yeah, she did great. And so we're all happy with it. It just was named one of the 8 comics to read in Vulture.
Nice. Yeah, that's great.
So, yeah.
Cool. So last time we had you on, you had done a bunch of books that were all very seriously or very realistically about hockey. Is this taking you a little farther afield? Is this something?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the two things I love to write about are hockey and music. So this one incorporates music. the protagonist is a folk singer in the 60s, comes to New York following Bob Dylan. So it takes place in Greenwich Village. And she gets mixed up with an off-the-books government group that is intent on taking down a Nazi cell that was sent here after World War II.
And this seems very similar to your other hockey books.
Yeah.
Well, and the guy from Vulture wrote that he goes, it's the premise sounds goofy, but they pull it off. So I was
nice.
I mean, what a compliment.
Yeah. That's classic Vulture writing for you.
Yeah. Backhanded compliment, best one I ever got.
Yeah. So. Now, do you feel like, I mean, obviously this stretched you in a very big way away from where you were before. Do you feel like it stretched you too far, or do you now want to get back to just writing about hockey books, or are you going to delve even further in the direction of this book?
That's a good question. I like the, I mean, I never did any action, so having to script out the action was a lot of fun and a bit of a challenge because, like I said, I've never done it. But spoiler alert, I'm doing another hockey book. I can't let it go. I like squeeze out every last drop, so that'll be the fifth one. Wow. But this one involves a girls hockey player.
Ooh, so. Let me combine your interests. What about hockey Nazis? Think about that.
That would be the second book. That's good.
That's not
I appreciate
a bad.
That,
I mean,
Justin.
It's just
that's
something
awesome.
To throw around.
Don't copyright that.
No,
idea.
I'm not at all.
Sorry. Are they all Nazis, or like the bad hockey team is Nazis?
I haven't figured it out yet. But yeah, there's probably just one Nazi out there. And you got to find it because everyone looks the same.
Oh, it's like a Where's Waldo book, but for Nazis.
Yeah, it's like yeah, just like the world.
It's like the worst Cool Runnings, but with hockey.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. An outsider team of Nazis wins the hearts of America through an ice-based sport.
Yeah. Well, the best thing about that book would be everybody's faces being like,
ehh. Yeah, yeah.
I'd be very into that.
Uncool Runnings.
Great. I'll give you a bunch of money after the show, and we'll get
great,
it going.
Great, great. Hollywood.
Queen of Kenosha, where can people pick it up?
Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it comes out next Tuesday, the 9th.
All right. Nice. Very That's cool. Awesome. Steve, let's move over to you. So you are just finishing up a Wonder Woman run, right?
Yeah, I don't know shit about hockey, too. So.
Oh, yeah. That's weird. She was playing hockey a whole lot.
It's Quidditch, actually, because we, you know... We own both properties, so.
So nice. We talked
hockey
about
for the air. They say
we talked about the Wonder Woman run on the show, and I was really surprised by it, just because it's coming in the middle of James Robinson's run and whatever's next for Wonder Woman, which is the Justice League Dark crossover and other things. So certainly, that's the sort of thing that could be phoned in a little bit. But this was some of my favorite Wonder Woman issues in a really long time.
It's really cool. You don't think I phoned it in?
Yeah, it's crazy.
A run that one reviewer said was, quote, the plot is fundamentally sound.
Oh, man. Now that's a backhanded compliment.
That's going on.
What you brought to it. What you brought to it is what you bring to a lot of things, which is a real depth of knowledge about the DC universe. You pulled out characters like Aztec, drilled into some other Amazonian characters that haven't been really delved into in for a while. When you come into a run like that, what is your goal? What is your MO when you're coming on to Wonder Woman?
Well, it was twofold. First of all, it was originally much deeper of cuts than even you know, because so the editor of Wonder Woman, Chris Conroy, was my first editor at DC Comics, so he knows me better than anyone else. And that means he basically gives me an allotment of deep cuts per issue. Like, when I turned in Midnight at Apollo 1, there was originally two montages of just obscure characters. And he looked at it, he was like, okay, you can only have one of these per issue. So we kept the one where it's a bunch of people turning down Henry Bendix. We couldn't do it, the second one of people getting their ass kicked by Midnight. It was very sad for me. So he knows my brand and knows how to just, like, tamp it down, squeeze it out, and get the best out of it. So long story short, originally it was going to have probably one of the nerdiest things that was ever in pre-crisis Wonder Woman, which was that they weren't just the Bonnie McDowell Amazons. There was another sect, and they were the Amazonian Amazons. They were Amazons in the Amazon.
No, I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
And it was decided that in 2018, no one could actually take that seriously. So that's why we ended up with the Tezcat Lapoca arc and one Amazon in the Amazon. But anyway, long story short, what did I want to do? Just tell a story that was really true to who Diana is. I mean, everybody says that, but I thought it was especially important because 51 was a jumping on point for people. And, you know, after a lot of what James had done, dealt with the back, you know, the sort of unpacking the idea that Wonder Woman had a brother. And so, you know, knowing that he wasn't going to be in Witching Hour, I actually don't know exactly the plans for Willow other than the broad sense. But knowing he wasn't immediately going to be appearing, like, let's remind people who Diana is, what she does, and what makes her unique. And that's how 51 started. And then when we found out there was going to be a little bit more time, it was the same idea, but like, let's give people a blockbuster that does that. And also, let's bring back something that I loved when I was younger. I mean, I like came to comics. Like when I got into comics, almost none of the actual people, like none of the lead heroes were using that name, using their hero name. Like Jean-Paul Vallée was Batman, Superman was dead, and there were four of him. And Artemis was like a thong-wearing redhead who fought. By the way, if you've ever read the Bill Messner Loeb's Mike Deodato Wonder Woman collection, it is a classic. I can't say that it's has aged incredibly well. Like she fights villains called like the Chauvinist and wow. the Joker.
Edgy. What's his deal?
You know, he's into numismatics.
Oh, okay.
And like the Joker shoots her in the face with paralyzing face cream. It's pretty something. But the point is, like, that was like, but that was Artemis in Boston. That was Wonder Woman for me when I first got into comics, at least something other than back issues. So I wanted to use Artemis and sort of reexamine her relationship with Diana, especially because, like, Diana is kind of who I want to be. She's compassionate. She's unendingly patient, but that is in no way who I am. Who I am is Artemis, who just wants to have no patience and, like, kick you in the balls for asking for a bagel to be toasted. So I needed both of those things.
You're kicking someone in the balls after you've asked them for the bagel to be toasted?
No, for asking for it to be toasted.
Someone's asking you to toast their bagel.
Yeah, like, I'm not a savage. But so I needed her in there.
Do you work at a Dunkin' Donuts on the weekend?
Well, I am a comics writer, but...
It's called Dunkin' now, I just wanted to...
Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
I worked at IHOP, but... No, anyway, so I wanted to... If we're going to have more time with Diana, we needed that counterpoint. We needed that, like, Diana... We needed that Diana without the rules, without the self-control, to cast that sort of contrast to her. And I just thought it was great to have them back together after a long time, especially with the New 52. And to put a lasso back in her hand, spoilers for people who read the issue last week. The real answer is, because I've been rambling a lot, like, you asked if this is an in-between run... I couldn't fundamentally change Diana. I could remind people of who she was, but I could push Artemis along and give her real character growth. So we had to do both those things. We needed to give people some calories for people who did all five issues, and also reposition Wonder Woman and remind people why she's great.
Cool. One thing that I really liked about your Wonder Woman characterization, which again we talked about on the show with one of the issues, is I feel like people miss her kindness, that she's a kind person sometimes, and I think that really came through in your run. Is that something that you worked on? Is that something you aimed for?
Well, I think it has to be, yeah, because, you know, there are so... She has more contradictions in her personality probably than Batman or Superman as the Trinity goes, because she's the whole generation of people who have grown up with her, especially... I mean, my generation, really, you know, ever since the Perez run, probably think of her first as a warrior, you know? Like, I remember reading issues of Wizard, like, Wonder Woman can beat up Superman, and I was like, oh, awesome. and that is awesome, by the way, but like then you have to contrast that she spent her whole life training for a war, but her message is peace. So how do you deal with both those things? So I think the kindness has to be there, and then she has to be that person that when you finally, like, she has, like, you know, almost an endless, you know, her camel's back is quite strong, but like when it finally breaks, it's... I don't want to say she's angry, but she's so forceful in her reaction because she's really let down. You know, it's not like Batman maybe doesn't expect people to be good. I almost feel like he can't. Life hasn't shown him that they are. But you look at what Jeff did in Blackest Night, saying, you know, oh, no one loves this world more than Wonder Woman. So just imagine her. It's like the superhero version of when you'd be younger and your parents would say, well, we're not angry, we're just disappointed. And she's extremely disappointed. That's the tragedy for her, because even someone like Rustum, he's too far gone in many ways, and she knows he has to be stopped. But the real tragedy is not that she's fighting him now. It's that she wasn't there 10 years ago or, you know, however long ago in weird comic time to be... there when he really needed Wonder Woman, not now when he's waging this war that's like hurting other people. So the tragedy is this being let down because she wants people to be good, and then I think on some level she's indignant that she, you know, can't be there for everyone and can't be Wonder Woman for everyone, because she feels that's her job, you know, more than Batman, more than Superman. I mean, Superman is Superman by chance, to be honest. You know, like he didn't like raise his hand and be like, I will exit this planet, please send me to Earth. Thanks, Mom and Dad. and Batman certainly wasn't like, hey man, Joe chill, like these guys suck, like let's get rid of them. Unless
great idea though.
I like
the 10-year-old Bruce Wayne's like, hey, I mean, my parents are bothering me.
I'd like to put a hit out on my parents.
That's a solid Brian Azzarello idea right there. But Wonder Woman, you know, like she has, I mean, from the start, she has crazy agency. She knows what the mission of Wonder Woman is, and she could have easily sat it out and been Hippolyta's daughter, but, like, took an active choice to do this. So I really think that kindness has to be there, and then that, like, that real heartbreak on her hand. Anytime when she finally does have to throw a punch, which certainly does happen, she's not a pacifist, but it almost hurts her more than the other person because that's a failure to her, you know, and when we fail that, unless we're, you know, complete sociopaths, we're kind of bummed out about that.
Yeah. Let's move on to a project coming up for you that I know you're super excited about. Martian Manhunter, you're doing with Riley Rossmo on art,
yeah.
Right? Which looks amazing. So Martian Manhunter is a curious character for those who haven't been keeping up with him because he was kind of not exactly out of the DC universe, but not in his regular position in the DC universe. And with Justice League has kind of finally come back there in the forefront, in the middle, in the mix of things. So where do we find him when the title picks up? What's the concept of the book?
Well, Martian Manhunter is not Martian Manhunter year one per se, but we are looking to tell a story that is much like Mr. Miracle has been sort of free from the constraints of current continuity, which isn't to say that it contradicts anything you've seen or are seeing in Justice League or are going to see in Justice League, but it takes place in a different time period. This is when John has recently come to Earth. He's living as Detective John Jones, and he's finally having to reveal himself as Martian Manhunter to first Middleton, Colorado, and then the rest of the world because of a mystery that starts in the town, a murder mystery. And the goal is to tell the evergreen Martian Manhunter story. We are taking more time, I would say, than almost anyone has taken on Mars. And at the same time, we're taking more time than a lot of people have done with his relationship with Diane Mead, with his life as John Jones, and his relationship with this dead man whose identity he assumed. This is the deepest dive into who John Jones is as a person, as a Martian, that you've ever seen. And at the same time, the sort of support we've been getting from DC, thanks to the success of things like Doomsday Clock, like Mr. Miracle, to push the boundaries of storytelling. You guys have seen the love scene from issue one. We are doing things that you haven't been able to do in a DC comic before. Not to be shocking or obtuse, but to really say that his world, especially on Mars, is alien. And this is not just people in green paint. This is a whole new culture. This is a whole new world. And when you see that, you see the tragedy of him losing his family and you still connect with it. That's the true magic of comics. That's the true magic of world building. I mean, Riley is a new father, and he's drawing these scenes of like John dropping Kim off to, or picking Kim up from school, going to like her community events, and it's really getting to him. And he's saying, like, I got to get back to Earth for a couple pages because this is really fucking me up. And knowing what's going to happen, and it's astounding. It'll be astounding for you guys when you see it because at the same time, Mars is so alien. Kim is like a floating jelly bean person, but all that emotion is still there. So we're giving John depth you've never seen before. A murder mystery that kicks off in Denver unravels his entire life, and it's. And it's like he's been living this double life. He is sad. He's shameful for not being able to save Mars. He's not responsible for the death of Mars, but when you're the last survivor of something, you take responsibility. And he has had a hard time dealing with the fact that John Jones is not him, meaning Detective John Jones. He is this other person who had this terrible thing happen to them. And saving Ashley Adams, this murder-kidnapping victim, from issue one, working with Diane Mead, coming, confronting the town of Middleton and revealing himself as Martian Manhunter, that's how he comes full circle with both the tragedy of Mars, the tragedy of Dr. Ertl, and owning up to who he really is, which is something he hasn't had to face since he started wearing the face of better man on Earth.
Now, hearing you talk about Wonder Woman, it sort of strikes me that they have similar, her and Martian Manhunter have similar sort of origin, where they're like, they've come from this place where they've lived this life, and then they're fascinated by Earth or by the rest of the world for Diana. Are they similar in that way?
I think they're sort of on either side of the mirror in many ways, at least. I mean, so where John is now, later in his career, in like Scott's Justice League run, he is in many ways very similar to Diana, but he's not there yet in Martian Manhunter. Like, Earth is... This is his second chance to be a better, a more perfect person. You know, he has made, because we're making him more real and multifaceted on Mars, he's made a lot of the compromises that any of us make. Compromises to make sure that our families are provided for. Compromises to make sure that our the next generation has a better life than we had. And there is an underside to that that blows up in his face. So for him, at least when he gets here now, Earth is his chance. It's his mulligan. It's his do-over. And it's really comfortable for him for a long time. But the hard part is for him to realize that is to have that blown up by the events of the first issue and enter a world where he can no longer hide from being a Martian, hide from being John Jones. Anyone who has a secret, anyone who has something inside them that they haven't, that they've, it's been easy on the surface to not reveal, but internally has been troubling for them. That's where he's at right now. So,
like Pete's addiction to sugar.
Yes, you know, like
you kept that secret from us for so long.
Because he's
frequent trips to Sugar Town.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Do you work Chacos in there? Do you have?
We do. We do have a Chaco mention in issue one. Come on, give me a hard one.
Well, I will ask you. You've worked with Riley before. What's your working relationship like on this? How has it morphed? How has it changed?
It's just gotten better and better. I mean, there was no Riley and I after, you know, we worked together on Night of the Monster Men. We worked together on Batman Shadow, and it was really we started on Night of the Monster Men to realize that we like a lot of the same things. You know, as soon as I started seeing the designs come in of these like body horror kaiju for Night of the Monster Men. I was just like, man, I got to keep working with this guy. And as we did Batman Shadow, we talked about a lot of the visual motifs that we could create, and we had a lot more back and forth, and I started to open up the script to where I would sort of drop panel descriptions and give him more room to experiment with layout and storytelling, and the results were amazing on Batman Shadow. And so with Martian Manhunter, that's come full bloom. We're not working Marvel-style slash plot format because... It's a modified style, but I've given him as much freedom as he wants, and he's taken it and run with it in ways that are really, really interesting. I said it in the announcement article, but I'm very interested. I'm very nervous. I'm extremely nervous about the book coming out because we are doing. I mean, we can do. I don't mean to shade like literally all of the comics industry here, but. Here we go. No, like, we can do 9-panel grid. We can do 12-panel grid in all the ways that anyone shows you that they're a quote-unquote capital S smart comics creator in 2018. And it's really cool to do what was smart in 1986. But giving Riley the room to innovate, he is doing what is innovative and cool and smart and inventing new comic book language in 2018.
And I will say, like, based on the art you show us backstage, like, Riley's art on those other books you're mentioning is sort of macabre and has this darkness to it. This is, like, totally light and bright and just, like, and Martian in a way that is different than I expected.
Oh, yeah. He's using two completely different art styles, for one for Mars, one for Earth, and we'll have different coloring styles as well, different lettering styles, because on Mars... Most people speak with telepathy. Like, people, I mean, they have voice boxes, but when you speak, it's when you're super emotional. That's, like, very vulgar. Using a voiced word is what I mean when I say that.
Yeah.
So
I'm the same way.
Yeah. And so, no, he has... I say I'm nervous because he's telling stories in a new way you haven't seen before, but that's what you guys deserve. And I don't mean to, like, actually throw shade. Like, I love the 9-panel grid, but the challenge on all of us... Anywhere should be to also do things new and push ourselves. I'm pushing myself as a creator with the book. I'm pushing Riley and vice versa. And that's why you're getting, hands down, the best book that we've ever done. You know, I would never actually, I mean, I don't like to compare to other creators because I can never take my head off and put it on Tom King's body. or vice
versa.
But
you're saying his 9-panel grid in the Mr. Miracle was bullshit.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm saying it's cute.
Oh, come on, man.
That's way worse.
That's fucked up. That's fucked up.
But I could also be wrong. Like, how many Eisners do I have? So that's all I can say.
Fair. I think I know the answer to this one, but were there any challenges in getting the head of a Martian? Like, I almost feel like that's different than, say, right, if you are aiming for something actually alien to write a character like that, did you find you had to stretch your brain in different configurations to understand how he thinks?
I mean, it's a challenge to not just make things the way that humans do it. But at the same time, like, who among us doesn't have something that is a little alien in them, you know? Like,
whoa.
I'm, you know, but I mean that, you know, like, I'm bisexual, I'm half Jewish, I could probably pass as not being half Jewish, at least, and if I'm with a woman, no one knows that I also sleep with men. So, like, I'm very cognizant of the fact that I do have things inside me that would make me foreign or alien to people if I hadn't at age 33 decided fuck that, everyone's going to know either way. And so the world building, there's a challenge to say, well, it doesn't have to be this way, or to say, well, maybe some things are universal, you know, like on one end, and then you sort of dial it back to be like, wait, because you know, like, Martians have cars, and on one hand I was like, well, they can fly. Why do they need cars? But then I'm like, well, humans could theoretically walk everywhere, but we're lazy as fuck, so we still have cars.
There are things that are far, right? Mm.
Yes, and so why wouldn't they have cars even if they can fly?
And flying's got to be tiring a little bit, right?
Sure,
it's
not just coasting. It is, yeah, exactly. So it's things like that. It's sometimes it's about pushing it further, and sometimes it's thinking about like sentient nature and pulling it back. Like, oh well. You know, they could fly everywhere. Or like telepathy. Like, the easy answer is they can hear everything all the time, but it's more interesting to me if this is their main mode of communication. Then in our book, telepathy works just like our voice. You know, like, you can't yell loud enough so someone in Japan hears you. So it's not like there's no cheats of like everyone on Mars can hear everyone. It's actually about thinking that extra step and wondering how things would really work. Or not really work, but how you could add depth to something that could be surface level and very simple, and how you could enrich it. And as to the characterization, as I said, like, it's really just about thinking about your own life. We all have something that makes us feel a little othered. It's just about knowing that and finding that.
We're going to have to move on in a second, but when does the book come out?
Martian Manhunter comes out in December, early December.
Right. And you have another book coming out from Aftershock?
I have a book. I have in October. I have a launch from Aftershock, Dead Kings, which is a post apocalypse. It's the world after we've already fucked things up, and everything.
We fuck it up again. We fuck it up twice.
It is. Well, post apocalypse. You get to see like a couple years after. This is like 100 years after. This is when we finally starting to make our comeback. Versus we're just scraping along. And this is a book with Matthew Dow Smith and Lauren Affey and Thomas Maurer coming out from Aftershock in October. And I should also mention Electric Warriors, which is launching from DC this fall. And that's me and Travel Foreman from Whole Cloth basically inventing the time period of the DC Universe in between, at least the time period of Jack Kirby's DC Universe, in between the Great Disaster and before the Legion of Superheroes. So some real nerdy stuff there as well.
That's awesome. Some continuity.
And how many Nazi hockey players are there in that group?
Well, there's one more than there was at the beginning of this interview.
Now we're talking. The impact.
Okay, pick all of that stuff up, and we're going to move on to our next section, which we like to call the stack.
Yeah, we do.
And in the stack, we're going to talk about a couple of books that came out this week. Let's kick it off with a DC comic book. What do you guys want to talk about? Doomsday Clock, number 7?
Doomsday Clock.
So this book, spoiler, finally gives us what everybody has been asking about since the beginning of this title. We finally get to see Dr. Manhattan mixing it up with some of the DC comic book characters. It might not be exactly the ones you expected, like the Joker.
Yeah.
But it happens, and true to form, the second week in a row, we get to see some D.
some D.
What's that stand for, Alex?
Yeah.
It stands for DC Comics characters.
Yeah.
Showing their dick.
Well, it stands for dick.
The full DC Comics logo is D-I-C-K. They just shortened it back in the 50s.
Right. They got rid of the I and the K.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's a little spelling lesson. you get to see that. There's a lot of other stuff that happens in this issue.
Yeah, so I don't think so.
Your review begins and ends with a blue tiny blue dick.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I gotta say, a lot of that was like the main question we got, particularly on Twitter. As soon as this book launched, people are like, "Are we gonna see Dr. Manhattan's dick?"
Man, what's going on? I've never really thought this, but it feels like Twitter is really going for the low bar, the lowest common denominator.
Not usually, though.
Yeah. I feel like this title feels like it's been going on for years, and I don't mean that as a slam per se, but it's such a dense book, and it took a long time to really get going. It really feels like it's moving now, and I really like this issue.
Pete?
A lot of blue dick, man.
Oh, so you're on the Alex
D
train.
Yeah, yeah.
Like D train downtown.
I was like, man, DC, come on. Can we just,
But there's so much shit in this book, and you can't get past. You don't even see, it's not like one panel is just a close up. It's just from the side. It's side dick. It's side dick, which is very fine. It's normal.
It's very fine.
It's just, it's not like you have to face it face to face.
I just wish DC would stop slapping me in the face with their cock and balls. You know what I mean?
I mean, did you not, did you shower in, like cutoffs in high school?
Definitely.
Okay, cool. That's what we should say. Pete's never seen his dick. Yeah. So that's
especially after I started eating so much horrible foods.
Yes,
it's disappeared.
The cookie craze of summer 18. Pete, it's been a while. The point is, I think this issue feels like it is the pardon the term, the flashpoint.
The head of this is the tip of the iceberg. What are you trying to say? It's the point.
There was a vast deference between the last.
Exactly. I think that's what I'm saying.
There's a lot of balls for him to say that.
It did. Yeah. It's the scrotal package if you want to read it as a whole, and it's really had me by the balls.
Yes. And penis.
Yes. Great.
Great.
What is it? We're a news organization. We've always said that, and I'm glad we proved it just now.
Cool. Definitely pick that up, I guess. Let's move on to The Punisher, number 2 from Marvel Comics. Pete, you're a big Punisher fan. You want to talk about this one?
You think?
I'm going to run backstage and grab the other comics in the meantime.
Okay, cool.
Didn't need to say that.
This issue is dealing with the fact that the rest of the Marvel superheroes are a bunch of bitches, and they're mad at Punisher for doing his thing, and they're all going to get up in his face about it, and then it's like, all right, well, if you're going to step to the Punisher, you're going to get hurt. And so we get this in this issue.
What are you, the Punisher's hype man? Jesus.
You're damn right.
Bunch of people trying to step to my bro. They're going to get slapped by his regular non-blue dick. I guess we don't know that. He might have a blue dick. It's out of... We don't know that.
Yeah, we don't know that.
Are you guys... I'm curious. Are you guys Punisher fans? Are you into the Punisher? Or is that not quite your thing?
I mean, I think it's really cute that Punisher thinks he's the hero of his own book.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he?
Pete also thinks
but
that.
But it is funny that you're uncomfortable with that blue dick, but that book is full of massive pseudo-penises. Like, that's all he literally...
All he does
is pull the trigger on a bunch of giant metal dicks.
Oh, man. I wish the Punisher's guns were dicks that shot smaller dick bullets
They kind of are.
Oh, my God. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
I really liked Garth's aging in real time Punisher, and I think he is good as long as you understand that it's a tricky character, mm-hmm. but there are thousands of tricky characters, and that's just a challenge. So for that reason, I love him. You just have to know what you're doing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Howard, how about you? How do you feel about the Punisher?
I always liked him. I go back to. Teamed up with Spider-Man way back when, and things like that. You know,
so it made more sense. Now he's always he felt like he was more of a person because he would talk to other people back then.
Yeah,
and now he's just he's very angry all the time. He does make a couple jokes in here.
Yeah,
he's screwed.
How do you feel about that, Pete?
I thought they were funny.
You like that?
Yeah.
You think a man
your
who
tolerance is like zero for the Punisher?
Yep.
By which I mean you love everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I would say, it's funny. I love the original Punisher costume. I saw, a couple people draw it online recently. And in some ways, I feel like the tragedy is that when we first put him in the T-shirt and the trench coat, it was really cool. But I almost want, there's no reason he would wear, white waiter gloves for killing people, but it looks so good.
You get blood on like, you get dirt and everything.
Like, I want to see, Chris Somney draw the original fucking Punisher costume.
I wear white gloves so I can see my hands get dirty.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's good.
I'm a butler on the weekends.
I gotta tell you, I think I've been pretty open about the Punisher as one of my least favorite characters. But
sure.
This is a lot of fun.
This is fun. So in this issue, the Netflix TV series Marvel Heroes show up to be like, Punisher, knock it off. And it's a great series of confrontations. Punisher has some quips throughout. He's really, I don't know if he's been like taking some sort of stand-up comedy class or something, but it's good. I feel like he's really coming into his own. Yeah. And he's really right where we want him to be.
He's been hanging out with D-Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, D-Man, I get it.
Dickman.
Dickman. Yeah. Also, no, I just want to say real quick, Penisher. I was holding on to that.
Oh, good. that's for the lexicon at the end of the segment. Yes. We'll just go through and really define all the terms we didn't get to.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. All right, let's move on to another TC
Justice
comic
League
book.
Dick? Oh, sorry. I don't know. What is the name of it? Great.
Justice League Dark.
Oh, great. So close.
Yeah, this is so there's a couple of different Justice Leagues. There's Justice League, Justice League Dark, and Justice League with Nuts. This is the second one. All right.
Wow, we finally have a heckler. Yeah.
I like how that was the line.
Yeah,
that was the line in the
sand. That's too much.
That was too much, Dick.
So this is dealing with the magic-based heroes in the DC universe. We had James Tynion IV, the writer of the book, on the show a couple of weeks ago. He talked about this very issue where they're facing down a new being called the Upside Down Man, who is part of a race called the Other Kind, who are trying to destroy magic on Earth. This is messed up in exactly the right way, and I love this book. How do you guys feel about
it? You're scared of the Upside Down Man.
I am scared. It's really upsetting because he's upside down, but like his mouth is kind of the right side, and it's hard to look at, but in a good way. You're a fan of body horror. Do you like this?
Yeah, no, I love Justice League Dark. I've been talking to James about it. Man, it feels like forever. So I'm really excited. Do you guys get to see it? But it's got a cast like every once in a while you read a book and you're like, fuck, I wish I thought of that. And like, for me, that's putting Man-Bat on this team. Like, this is like the Justice League. He cracked the code of like how to do magic Justice League. And it's by making it as eclectic as he has. I think Man-Bat is his breakout character for this book.
For sure.
Absolutely. Same with Clayface when he was doing tech, like he's going to do crazy things with Langstrom. You know, my Man-Bat would have been much worse. It was North by Northwest with Man-Bat. So that's not a joke. But that's also why I'm not writing Man-Bat. Yeah. No, I love it. And I love this sort of like raw horror. It's funny because James is such like a nice guy and like you don't expect that he is just like full of spiders.
He really is. He's all spiders.
But he really is. And I also like, I weirdly love his Constantine. I feel like there is a... It's a hard character to get, but he gets them especially here. Like, there's a cadence and a pacing and the type of things he says that are on this weird line between, like, not too cute but also not a dad joke because, like, he knows he's cool and super sexy.
I feel like the trap with him is always having him talk too much, and it's really
good to hear. He says the right things.
Exactly. He just talks a little bit because that's his whole thing. He wants to sit in the corner and drink while everyone's fucking around, and then he talks a little bit.
Yeah, no, like he waits till the bar fight is over, and then once you've been kicked in the balls, he comes over and says, like, look at you now, and then he leaves.
Yeah. With a cigarette.
Yeah.
I wanted to say the art is also really amazing, and the swamp thing, like a big panel spread, was really powerful and amazing.
Yeah. You got some Swamp Thing coming in Witching Hour, man. Like, I may have seen Witching Hour because it has Wonder Woman in it, and there is some heavy Swamp Thing moments that are going to be really, really cool.
That's great.
Next week?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Tomorrow.
Sure, tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Oh, it is Tuesday.
Yes. Yep. Hey. In fact, we do a regular Wednesday morning podcast, Wednesday at 9 a.m. It goes up, so we'll have a review of Justice League Dark, Wonder Woman, The Witching Hour, #1 in that podcast in the same Comic Book Club feed. Let's move on to our last title, X-Men Blue, #36 from Marvel Comics. Now, this is...
Ironically, there's no blue dick in this, despite the title.
Right. I mean, you'd think
that's
that.
True, because it's hairless beast.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of beast.
So this title, this focuses on the young, time-displaced X-Men. It's the last issue written by Cullen Bunn. It's, I think, the last issue that's going to involve them, ostensibly, because we're going event where they're going to go back to their regular time. I thought this issue was great. I thought it was really well written. I thought it was very emotional. You're smiling, so you didn't think so.
No, I just think this issue is emblematic of a lot of the problems I think that the X-Men corner of the universe has, where it's like there's too much shit going on. The back half of this issue, this issue is all about the characters sort of saying goodbye and getting ready to go back to their normal time period. And they're saying goodbye, and a villain is about to interrupt Scott and Jean's private moment, and then a dimensionally displaced from the Ultimate Universe Wolverine, who is wrapped in an alien symbiote that is not a main symbiote. It's a poison that they encountered in outer space. Is in the background, stops the villain and says, "Hey."
Also, Sabretooth is in there somehow.
That's just how he looks, but he just sort of vanishes in the background. I was like, "Yo, that's fucking crazy!" As a one panel, like, "Hey. Have a nice day." And then he goes off in the distance. It's like, what?
Trying to explain Jimmy Hudson anti-venom is like, that's like comic cancer right there.
Yeah, it is. It's like, insane to get into it.
I agree with Justin, this issue of X-Men Blue. I just...
You agree with the title.
Yeah, I just think that they were just trying to make sense of all the anarchy and all the different people. And then it was like, in the middle of a maybe sweet moment, I was like, oh, good, Wolverine's going to show up and be like, yo, fuck this whole relationship. But it was like, no, I believe in that. And I was like, well, how, why?
But I think this is actually like, it's a well-written issue. It's just there's so much stuff floating around these people.
It's definitely, I mean, it's a last issue, so don't pick it up clean anyway. But
I was going to say, on one hand, I just said that it was super complicated. But as I think back, like, I'm like, when has X-Men not been, like, needlessly complicated?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that is true, like, but I do think there was a time when it was a narrative line of craziness as opposed to, like, swimming in a pool of insanity. And it feels like this specifically is like, oh, this character pops up, who is this? And then, like, oh, these are time displays. It feels like they're just awash in it.
Okay, explain X-Men to me.
Explain the character X-Men? No problem. So Cable is a character who came from the future. We find out later.
Wait, who is Cable?
Cable is he is the son of Cyclops, Scott Summers, and Madeline Pryor, who was infected with a techno-organic virus who was sent into the future because they couldn't hear.
Who is Madeline Pryor?
Madeline Pryor is the clone of Jean Grey, who is cloned because she became Phoenix and went off into space. She was about to become Phoenix, and they cloned Jean Grey to keep her at the bottom of the ocean before Madeline Pryor could go into space to become Phoenix, and then Dark Phoenix, who then came back and was killed.
Okay, now who's Phoenix?
Phoenix, okay, no problem. This is an ancient force. Okay, great.
It's fine.
It is crazy.
Yeah, it's totally crazy. It's absolutely ridiculous, but I think, like, and I'm not saying you guys did it, but as somebody who read all of X-Men Blue and has read most of the issues involving the young X-Men, just on its own, like, purely, is this something that I would hand to somebody on the street and be like, hey, comics, no way.
Don't do that anyway. Don't just go up to strangers and be like, hey, read this, man.
Oh, I do that all the time. Just run through and be like, you got to read this. Check it out. It's got a cool blue dick.
But to your point, yes, it is. This is definitely, when this first happened, when Brian Michael Bendis pushed this through, like, it definitely felt like, oh, this is so complicated, but he wants to write these young X-Men characters and try to adjust or change the way the whole universe works. And there was some cool stuff. The Iceman stuff has been super interesting.
Yeah, that was great.
How a young Iceman came out, thereby outing the older present-day version of himself. And that I feel like that's a lasting, that will last from this. On the other hand, Beast getting into, like, magic is probably not going to last.
No?
I feel like the blue, furry blue scientist character whose whole thing is science, all of a sudden being like, I'm magic, too, is probably not going to hang.
All right, probably not. Okay. Okay, we'll agree to disagree, and that's it for the stack. Yeah. Guys, we're going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for that, we're going to go out to you. All you have to do is ask a question, and you're going to get some free comics. So let's get a hand. You, sir, right there. Hold on. I'm going to try to stretch it over to you. All right, Eric, come stand up because my mic cord's short. What's your name? What's your question?
Hi, it's John. And
what's up, John?
Howard, Queen of Kenosha being like Dylan inspired. Dylan's Manchester Free Trade Hall performance, where he turned away from acoustic folk and in a more popular music direction. Do you think it was secret Nazis?
Wow.
Wow.
Great question. Though we do get this question every show.
Yeah, we get this question a lot. When
it's
Dylan,
a good thing that you're finally here to help us answer.
Yeah, Dylan plugged in. Were Nazis involved?
No. That was a purely commercial decision, I believe. But
whoa.
No, that was...
So do you feel like, I'm curious, because everybody listens to different stuff. Do you guys listen to stuff? Do you listen to music when you're writing, or do you like it purely quiet? How do you embrace it?
My books, I always put the recommended listening in front of each chapter. So it'll be songs either that I'm listening to at the time or songs that I feel inspire the chapter. So so I've had that for all five of my or for the graphic novels I've done. So
nice.
Steve, what about you?
I only listen to like albums by famous actors.
Great choice. There's so many good ones.
Like,
there's so many good ones.
So it's party all the time.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
No, the real answer is I learned to write in the back of a Denny's because I was always out of my house, so I actually go insane if it's silent. So what I actually usually have on is like the thousands and thousands of like wrestling pay-per-views that are on the WWE network in the vault from like 1974 because I just need like rambling in the background so that I can then ignore that and focus on comics. Otherwise, I lose my mind.
Right. And also you need a large stack of pancakes and some eggs. Otherwise, you go crazy.
Just the smell.
First of all, it was a Grand Slam slugger for me, but yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Moon's over my hammy.
You, sir, what's your name? What's your question?
Hi, my name is Kier.
Hey,
what's going on? So my question is for Steve. When you were assigned to do Martian Manhunter, like, there wasn't that many solo Martian Manhunter titles out there. What did the thought occur to you, like, oh my gosh, like, what could I bring to the table that hasn't been brought to Martian Manhunter before, or what can I do to really make like wow this book?
Yeah, well, first of all, I wasn't assigned. I asked for the book because he's my favorite character. So no, but even more so, yes, absolutely. Because I want more people to find out why he's great. So that's certainly on my mind. What can we do new? And what can we also do that better explains to you folks why I think he's wonderful? Because a lot of people ask, like, he's either like the man, you know, in the chair for the Justice League, if you watch Justice League Unlimited, or he's always the heart and soul of the Justice League. But why? And also, even though that's always true, that's defining him by his relationship with other characters. Why do you love him? So that's definitely on my mind. I mean, I love, like, Ostrander and Mandrake's run was going on when I first got into, like, contemporary periodical comics. The runs from the 80s, American Secrets, were wonderful. And I find there's something to be learned and build off of in all of his solo series. I love the Eddie Barrows and Rob Williams series that happened in DCYOU, for example. I'm hoping I can get a Mr. Biscuits reference in this book. But it's always on my mind because when you work in a lesser known character, the number one responsibility, especially if you have lost yourself in DC Who's like me, is to explain, not just like tell people a character that they don't know about is great, but you have to show why. You have to show, not tell why. And so that's what we got to do in the book. That's what we're going to do in the book.
Nice.
Cool. Great question.
Have you watched Supergirl at all?
As the former writer of Supergirl, yes, I'm familiar with the show Supergirl.
I just think that Martian Manhunter has been fantastic.
I know.
Supergirl
no, he's
series.
Been great. My dream is to have David Harewood somehow do something for this book. Hold it up in a picture, touch it, eat it. I don't care.
Cool.
Nice.
Cool. All right. You, sir, what is your name? What is your question?
My name is Kevin. My question's for everybody. What are some of your favorite sugar or candy related comics?
Sugar or candy related?
I like the speed at which you asked that.
Yeah.
It's like you're hopped
Thanks
up on
Thanks for not
candy.
Wasting time. Yeah. Sugar or candy related comics?
That's tough.
I I don't know. The first one that came to mind, I mean, this is probably not necessarily my favorite, but it's the most recent, and it's not candy related at all. Rainbow Bright number one is coming out from Boom Studios, from Jeremiah Whiteley, and Brittany Williams is on the art, and it's great. It's a really good book. We were talking about this on the review podcast, but I have no relationship with Rainbow Bright whatsoever. I don't know anything about any sort of mythology or anything like that. But I was super into it.
I feel like it was pretty light on mythology.
Yeah, a little bit. So I enjoyed that. Also, no candy in that, so that's a terrible question. Wait, I have a better one.
I have one.
Yeah?
Well, you have another one? Or do you
I have another one, but it might be the same one.
I was going to say Adventure Time. The Adventure Time comics are very good, dealing with the Candy Kingdom, and especially right the first, I don't know, 25, 30 issues were really great, especially if you love the TV show.
Pete, you got one?
I mean, the first thing I thought of was the old Hostess ads in the comic books. Those are really fantastic.
An addict's coming clean here.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was thinking about those Snicker ads that really pissed me off in the DC comics for a while there. They're driving me insane.
We should say, yeah, Pete dwells on the ads in comics maybe more than others.
I'm very scared of the Ice Cream Man DC is doing is
Image Comics.
Image,
that's Image Comics. Yeah. They just got option for a film today.
Yes.
We talk about that book all the time, but if you haven't read it, it's a semi-anthology series about this ice cream man who goes around and weird things that happen around him. It's very horror-inflected.
Not just weird.
Yeah, it's evil.
He might be a good guy in the end.
What? Yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't know. He's giving out ice cream.
He was skinning a person.
Well, yeah, maybe he was doing it for the right reasons, Pete. Maybe that skin was irritating that man.
Oh, my God.
He had a son.
You are so naive.
We'll see. And the TV show when it premieres.
The other thing, the Hostess thing made me think of one of my favorite books ever, Spider-Man Human Torch number 4 by Dan Slott.
Oh, yeah. Of course,
which brought the Hostess fruit pies into continuity. I
have no problem believing that was a Dan Slott book.
Fantastic.
That's nerdier than anything I've done. And that's impressive.
That's a real dare. That was one of his first books.
Yeah, it was.
As well. If I become a comic book writer, I'm going to bring those pies.
It's a fantastic book. It's Spider-Man right after Gwen Stacy dies. He's driving around to the Spider-Mobile. Human Torch is trying to cheer him up, and they end up using Hostess fruit pies to foil a villain. It's very emotional and hilarious at the same time. Fantastic issue. Do you guys have any answers? Candy-themed books? Howard, pass.
No.
I'll answer. So, first of all, at first I was like, boom, Keith Giffen, Bilquis, Everly, Sugar and Spike collection. Like, Bilquis is crushing it on The Dreaming, and they gave it this book like 2 or 3 years ago. It's really it's low calorie, ironically, for this topic, but fun. And it's about Sugar and Spike, dealing with like weird continuity mysteries because they run a museum for like bad superhero costumes. That's great. And then, Kira, you had asked about all the other Martian Manhunter series, and there's an amazing one-off issue of the Ostrander Mandrake Martian Manhunter series. It's actually Ostrander and Doug Monkey, and it's set in the Justice League International era, and it is 100% about John's addiction to Chacos. And you find out that when he doesn't have them, so it's like an intervention, basically. I think Ice comes in, is like, you've got a problem, John. He's like, what are you talking about? I could go a whole day without eating Chacos. And then he just slowly becomes the Incredible Hulk, culminating him turning actually into a Hulk-sized beast and yelling, Mars needs Chacos, and rampaging through the city. And that is an amazing book as well. And the cover is him sitting in the throne of Chacos. Beautiful Tom Mandrake art, easy to find. So that bears mentioning as well.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. The comment was they brought it up in Brave and the Bold. So there you go. Awesome. Great question. We could take one more. Absolutely anybody. You right back there. Come on up. Yes. All right. Come on up. Come on down. What's your name? What's your question?
My name is Mike. I have a question for Steve. I noticed you're wearing a Seven Samurai shirt.
Yes.
and that's my favorite movie. And
awesome.
Martian Manhunter is also my favorite DC character.
Ooh.
So I was wondering if you ever considered like which of the seven samurai he's closely related to, since he's a member of the Justice League, and they typically have seven members.
Holy shit.
I'm going to be
really pulling it all together,
wow,
this guy.
Oh, man.
This guy sees through the time.
You should host a talk show.
Yeah. That's a tough one. That's
deal
a
with
one.
That. I know. It is really fucking hard. I don't know if I can answer that, man. Like, I think of, like, Kurosawa and Leone are, like, a huge influence on me. I'm always writing Clint Eastwood, which means I'm basically always writing Toshirô Mifune as well. The real answer is that he's more like Mifune in Yojimbo, because his whole identity is put upon and completely fake, and that's probably not the answer you want, because he's not in Seven Samurai. But as Kurosawa characters go, to me he is unquestionably most like the lead from Yojimbo, because he doesn't really. There's nothing in the town that he's rescuing. He enters into a small town, and there's nothing about him that's actually real and not just completely a facade or made up on the spot, at least before the beginning of the series. So that's like a 7 out of 10 cop-out, I can't lie to you, but that's still my answer.
All right. It's a good answer.
Hey, it's a great answer. And that is it for your audience questions.
Yeah.
Guys, we're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Mr. Pete LePage.
Mr. Pete LePage.
All right.
This coming down into the footlights, the star of trivia.
I hate you.
I know.
You're a horrible person. All right.
You shouldn't have had me be your announcer and your hype man.
Yeah, you're not. I just do this.
No, I'm hyping you.
He announces it, and then you chime in like a douche.
I just, it's part of my job at the show, is just welcome
person.
You from the shadows downstage.
I have asked you several times not to do this, because we're wasting time instead of moving on.
Let me be honest.
Me angry, which then intimidates the audience not wanting to come up.
It doesn't intimidate the audience, but honestly, your reaction is taking so much time.
You're a piece of shit!
Could you hurry up your reaction?
You're a horrible person who constantly picks on me.
The star of trivia, take it away.
This is the opportunity for a lucky audience member to win $25 free dollars in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. Who would like $25 of free dollars? Simple raising of the hand so you can come on down and answer some easy trivia. Yes, you, casual first hand up guy, please.
All right, here you go.
Nice.
Okay. All right, yeah, a couple people excited. There we go. All right.
I'm not scared.
Good, good. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could be here.
Pete.
Sorry, it's his stuff. Face. I'm putting it on you. That's not fair.
It's okay. Not
it's
fair.
It's just I see you. I think of that asshole. I'm sorry. Okay.
Okay, okay.
So today's trivia is about our lovely guests. Remind the audience of your name again, please.
I'm Keir. Hi, guys.
Keir, audience Keir. All right, great. All right, so... Question number one, please listen to the question. Listen to all three possible answers. Get all three questions right. $25 yours. Here we go. Steve Orlando's Midnighter series, which is one of my favorites, has won many awards. Which award has he not won for that series? Is it A, the Broken Frontier Award, B, the All-Comic Award, or is it C, Jumping Jehoshaphat? So it's either A or B, which you shouldn't pick, because those are actual awards, or it's C, the made-up answer.
C?
C is correct. Congratulations.
Nice. Great job.
All right. Question number two. Howard Shapiro, when he's not writing about hockey, is writing about other things. How many books has he completed that you can go out and seek and find? Is it A, 10, B, 7, or is it C... I should have taken that left turn at Albuquerque. So it's A, 10, if you would like $25. Or you could pick B or C.
A, please.
A is correct. That's right. 10 books. Fantastic. Mostly about hockey. Sometimes about music.
Cool.
But we're hoping for more. All right, here we go. Steve has won an Eisner and a Harvey Award for what series? Is it A, Namesake? B, Outlaw Territory, or is it C, Suffering Succotash? So it's either A, don't pick it, or it's B.
B, sir.
That is correct. Outlaw territory.
Nice.
$25 sir.
Man, I really, that was the one that I thought was going to be touch or go for a second there. I thought maybe he wasn't going to get it this time.
Touch or go.
Touch or go.
Yeah.
You touch choose. And go?
Touch and go.
Oh, that makes more
touch
sense.
Touch and go for a second.
Huh. Oh, I get it. Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
I am looking forward to Batman the Max number one. Very excited about this matchup. And also Doctor Strange number six.
Great. Anything you want to say about either of those?
I'm looking forward to them.
Oh, great. Thanks, that's Pete. Definitely baked into the concept. Why don't you explain who the Max is?
Well, it's if you saw Liquid Television way back in the day,
great.
So, if you know what the Max is, you know what the Max is. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, nice.
Sure. Yeah.
Great.
Great.
Wow, that was you guys. You guys just had a fight. I'm looking forward to Nightwing number 50 coming out from DC Comics tomorrow.
Are you nervous about what's going on with Nightwing?
I'm not.
Because he's dead.
I feel
he
like...
He got shot in the head by a sniper, so he's dead.
That's a bit of a spoiler.
First of all, it's not even the first time he's been shot in the head.
Yeah.
For real?
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Because he got shot in the head in Batman versus Robin.
Wow. Yeah, he's taking some hits.
Dude,
he's fine.
This guy can't be fine.
He got better.
I think he's going to be okay.
I'm pretty sure he's dead.
No, well, you think it's just like a slow, long autopsy in this issue?
I don't know. I'm just saying usually if somebody gets shot in the head, they're usually
slow
dead.
Autopsy worked for Alan Moore.
Yeah.
So
that's comics genius. It's not going to be that. I'm excited to see where the character goes.
Yeah. I'm excited. Death of the Inhumans number 4 from Marvel Comics is coming out tomorrow. So this series, I feel like it's been away for longer than a month. I don't know if it took a little while.
Correct.
But as the title said, the Inhumans are slowly getting killed off by this dude named Vox. Very curious to see where it's going to go next. If the Inhumans, in fact, are going to survive, what's going on with Vox, what the mystery is. It's been a great series so far, so I'm excited to check out more. Howard, plug your stuff again. What should people check out?
Queen of Kenosha comes out next Tuesday, and you can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and my publisher's site is animalmediagroup.com.
Cool. Very cool. And Steve, plug your stuff.
Oh, man. Unexpected, still ongoing from DC Comics. Make sure you catch that as that goes on. Wonder Woman, my run just wrapped last week, but keep an eye on The Witching Hour, which starts this week and is picking up from the last page of Wonder Woman 55. And then in December, go get Martian Manhunter. If you thought that Tom King won when he had a birth on page in Mr. Miracle, come talk to me in December.
Whoa. Oh.
Shots fired.
Tom King taken.
Shots fired.
Oh, man.
Interesting. Would you say your book coming out about the post-apocalyptic is titled?
What's the title?
Yeah.
Dead Kings.
Dead Kings. Dead. Tom King. Dead
oh.
Kings. Okay.
Martian. I see what's going on.
Put it together.
It's a little touch and go.
Now talking. Everyone's getting it.
All right. I get it.
Wow.
Really a couple of things we need to plug on our end. If you would like to support the show and other shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. We have a bunch of fun bonuses. We have a private Slack that's fun to hang out in.
Oh, we're hanging out.
Yeah, there you go. Those people know what's up. And we send out free prizes. Not free prizes. You guys pay for them a little bit. But we brought this as well. Also, we have a bunch of other podcasts you guys can check out.
All right. Pete's loving that one. Look, he's cheered up.
Oh, God.
He's cheered up.
Thanks, Alvin.
Anytime.
He just ate 4 sugar packets.
Riverdale's coming back, you guys. Woo-hoo! Riverdale. And our Riverdale podcast is coming back, too. Riverdale After Dark. It's on its own dedicated podcast feed. We have a preview episode that should be going up tomorrow or the next day, so check that out. And then we'll have subsequent episodes after each episode airs. So definitely...
Yeah.
You check that out as well. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our show.
Follow us at Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank Howard for being on the show.
Yeah.
Steve! Woo-hoo! Boothman Prime! But most of all, we want to thank you guys for every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming out. We really appreciate it. Nice.